Warning, the radio broadcast you're about to hear was made by men and for men. It may at times seem a little rough around the edges, brash, and certainly not canonically approved by papal authority, but its content may indeed challenge you to become the man, father, or husband God has called you to be. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to another week of The Obligation. My name is Jason Murphy, and I hope you're all having a fantastic week. On this episode, we are sitting down with local author Charles Fraun. Charles is the author of several books, including his latest, Slaying Dragons, What Exorcists See and What We Should Know. The book is about the spiritual battle against evil spirits and can be a spiritual help for souls in our times, in our spiritual fight against the devil and his influences. Charles, welcome to The Obligation.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, super excited to sit down and talk to you. I guess we first met for the 2020 Men's Conference. I think you decided to sponsor, which first off, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you being a sponsor for the last 2 years and getting ready for the third coming up in March.
Yeah, they've been great events and a good cause all around.
For those out there who don't know Charles, Charles is an author, written the book Slaying Dragons, but you've also got a few other books. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about Slaying Dragons and the others you have out?
Yeah, so Slaying Dragons is definitely the big one. So the full title, Slaying Dragons, What Exorcists See and What We Should Know. It has three bishops' endorsements now. It's selling internationally. I'm just talking to a priest earlier. He's a monk, and his abbot is reading the book right now, which was a nice surprise, and he's going to get it later today, I think. But Slaying Dragons was the fruit of a spiritual renewal process that I went through. And during that process, I wrote two other books. So the first book I wrote is called Come Away by Yourselves. It's a practical guide to prayer for busy Catholics, essentially. I call it a guide to making a retreat, but I might change the subtitle because it's more fitting as a guide to prayer for busy Catholics, based on the teachings of St. Alphonsus Liguori, who's one of my favorite doctors of the church. And then while I was researching for Slaying Dragons, so that was written before I researched for Slaying Dragons, but while I was actually writing Slaying Dragons, I wrote a book for the youth because I attended I gave a talk at a diocesan youth conference in the mountains on spiritual warfare, and all the preparation I made, all the writing, all the reflection turned into a book called Swords and Shadows, Navigating Youth Amidst the Wiles of Satan. So that book is much shorter, designed for youth, young adults, and for their parents. So I made it really short, so if kids read it, they'll actually finish it, because most kids don't read nowadays, which is part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I also have Slaying Dragons in Spanish, and it's called Matando Dragones.
Yeah. Okay, that was one I was going to ask you. I wasn't sure about that one. I was looking back on that, so that makes sense.
I'm still trying to get the word out pretty far for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So briefly, what led you into the path of writing, I guess, first off, and then into the spiritual warfare and kind of the expansion of that? And kind of a little bit how your faith, were you just brought up strong in the faith, or was there some speed bumps there? And then you kind of did a nice comeback. And I know how that is myself. We don't have enough time to go into all that, but just briefly, kind of so everyone kind of knows, what led you into that? Because it is a very intriguing subject.
Yeah. The more I've looked back on it, especially with writing Swords and Shadows, because to write that, I looked back on my own youth, my whole life. And once I had learned the spiritual warfare things that exorcists can teach, I saw my youth from a whole new perspective and through a whole new lens. And really, it seems like God was, divine providence. Of course he was, but I didn't see it until now that he was really setting me up for this. I had no plan on writing these books, no plan on becoming a researcher of spiritual warfare and the teachings of exorcists. But I think God did. I think that was what God was leading me to toward my whole life. So growing up, I was a nominal Catholic too. My mom was Presbyterian. She converted when I was a senior in high school, but I didn't appreciate it. I was not clued in, didn't get it, didn't care. But we saw the positive effects. My brother, I have one brother, he and I both saw the change in my mom when she converted. It just became so much more peaceful. It was tangible. It was manifested everywhere. It was great. But I didn't put two and two together. and realize, wow, the Catholic faith is really powerful. I didn't make that connection. My dad was Catholic, but he worked so much, I think that took a toll on his ability to hand down the faith to us, which is a burden every, you know, father has to fight against, is being overworked and therefore not able to feed spiritually your family. So I was a nominal Catholic, didn't learn the rosary, didn't pray, didn't know how to pray, only prayed spontaneously, got led into a Protestant youth group in late high school, which was good in a way that it introduced me to God, but did not bring me anywhere. My faith did not change. My friends, our moral life did not change. Like, we were all hellbound. That's how I put it, because I taught high school theology for 10 years. I would always refer to myself as a youth as a hellbound pagan, because if I had died before my conversion at the age of 20, I would be in a fiery limbo, a fiery place, I should say.
I'd probably get a few years on you, so I'd have been there waiting for you, welcoming you then to the, I'm sure. So
that's right. So it was bad. My youth was bad. And in that regard, I was, you know, not the worst person, but I'm still hellbound pagan. I did enough. But it all kind of changed because from the age of 5 onward until junior year in high school, I was teased for big ears, having big ears. And this defined my life from the age of 5. And it set me up for this massive depression, and a major depression and a crippling anxiety disorder. I was eventually put on 5 medications. I dropped out of college. So it all like hit me at age 19, 20, second year of college. It just, there was nowhere lower I could go except for, you know, suicide. That's the only next step. And thankfully God, I was a coward. Thankfully I did not have the gumption, it's not courage, obviously, but the gumption to do anything about it. So God prevented me, thanks. Yeah. But that was a moment of true despair. That semester, I dropped out my first semester of my sophomore year in college, and it was true despair for like 3 or 4 months. And I was yelling at God, blaming God for everything. I had left the church after high school, never went back. But all these things, there's a whole other story right there, but all these things started to happen where God showed me that he was listening to all of my cries, my tears, me yelling at him, and he was ready to act, and he was going to, even though I didn't deserve it, and he started to without me asking. And my whole life changed immediately, like overnight, essentially, right around Christmas of the year 2000. So Christmas, I guess, 1999, year 2000 was the big change. And then I wanted to be a priest, wanted to be a monk, but I was really damaged from the depression and the anxiety. It took me about 9 years during which I was discerning the priesthood to really find the healing. And then I discerned I wasn't called the priesthood, left the seminary after a year and a half. That was in 2008. I met my wife 4 months later, we got married. So we have 3 kids. Number 4 is on the way now.
Congrats.
But I got my master's and started teaching theology. But still, I didn't. There was still a lot of work that had to be done. So when it came to writing, I had an interest in writing all the way back to when I was 12, just amateur stuff. But I always liked to write. Even when shortly after my conversion, I was writing again. I started journaling for like 10 years. I would do a daily journal. I had these fiction stories I would write. Different research I liked to do. So when I got to my master's, that was great because I was doing all this research. And after my master's, I started researching all these different Catholic topics. Nothing came about to being a book until around 2017. I felt, and this, it makes a great story, you know, God makes great stories, but I got to a point where it was like I had hit a spiritual roadblock, a blockade, and I could not progress in holiness any more than I had already achieved. And I didn't know, I didn't like that. I didn't know what it meant, and I felt powerless to challenge it. And It was a really bizarre moment. So I started talking to some priest friends that, you know, lo and behold, they were trained in exorcism stuff and deliverance ministry. I didn't know it. So they started giving me some advice, and I did Exodus 90, which involved a lot of fasting. I can't afford to really lose weight, but I lost 20 pounds.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, I did a little bit. I was a little dizzy at the end.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Cold showers are the worst for me, but that's a great program. Yeah. Sure. Something I know I need like more often, but I got to do it again. So we'll see one day, but go on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I want to do it again too, but I'm kind of a coward, you know?
I'm right there with you.
It's rough. I traded the cold showers for lukewarm showers and driving to school with the windows down when it's like 30 degrees. Like,
okay. I mean, you know, That's for me, that was the toughest. That was just, poor, it's brutal. It's brutal. Yeah. I mean, I did it, and I hate to scare guys, because that was what I would say. But I mean, a lot of guys said it wasn't the food, it wasn't necessarily showers for them, it was other things. So I think it's everyone's, you know, different journey they're on. Well, that's awesome. I mean, that you and I could talk for a long time, because it sounds like our past up until the age of, you know, 20, 21, perhaps is right on par, because I kind of did that pendulum swing and I ended up in a seminary myself. You know, bouncing around, I discerned Brothers Novitiate, Benedictine monks, and then ended up in with the Fraternity of St. Peter briefly, and then Society of St. Pius the X for a little bit longer. And then God eventually, you know, helped me to see my way. I came out, met my wife like 9 months after I came out of the seminary in 2000. So I think we're, you know, our paths, they kind of cross there. We've had some very interesting patterns there for sure. And that we have six kids. So you've still got a little work to do on that part, but
that's right.
But that's congratulations on that. Before we get into anything too serious here, you were recently on with Keith Nestor, right?
I was, yeah.
Which is pretty exciting and interesting, since he's going to be at the 2022 conference coming up. So super excited about that. I was curious how y'all cross paths. How did that come up?
Yeah, the whole thing I'm into is, you know, ever since my conversion started, God revealed himself as divine providence. Like, if I trust him, he will orchestrate my whole life. And he shows off, as I like to put it.
Yes.
So I was just, my book is self-published, but it's selling internationally, because I think God has pushed me to through a grassroots networking strategy, just contact everybody I can. So Keith Nestor, it's funny, I was just watching on Twitter, St. Benedict Press, Tan Books, was advertising a book. I think it's this new Consecration to St. Joseph. It has a black cover. I'm not sure if you've seen it yet. I can't remember the name of it, but they had a 5-minute commercial. And in the commercial were all these podcasters talking about the book, like Patrick Coffin, Census of Fidelium, a couple other people. I'm like, all right, who are these? So I watched it, and then Keith Nestor popped up. I'm like, Keith Nestor, I've never heard of him. And I don't know everybody, so he's got a good following.
Sure.
So I looked him up, sent him a message, said, I'll send you a book. He said, great, yeah, Divine Providence. I'd love to have you on the show. So real fast, it took off. We did a show. We did two, one on sacramentals and one on spiritual warfare. The spiritual warfare was such a big hit. It was live. We're going to do a follow-up right before All Saints, All Hallows Eve.
Oh, that'd be great, yeah.
I think it's October 26th. It's a Tuesday.
Okay.
And then I found out he's coming to Charlotte. I'm like, again, divine providence.
Well, just sitting here right now doing this little work, this little show, The Obligation, which we're almost at a year on, it kind of spawned from the Catholic Men's Conference. I had gotten away from the Catholic Men's Conference for a few years for, you know, different reasons. Of course, family growing and expanding, and just things got busier and busier. But I knew God was calling me to do something. I knew I had to get it back involved and do something. And one day I received a phone call, and he asked me if I'd want to get back in, and I just instinctively said yes, absolutely. And so that, you know, I guess the 2019 conference, jumped back in, and David from Carolina Catholic Radio wanted to do some cross marketing. I did a few recordings, and then I started doing some reflections. And then he said, "What do you think about a show?" And I'm just like, "I don't know about that. I can't listen to myself speak, and I can't get in front of people and do all that." But here we are, and you know, who knows where it'll go? And there's no coincidences. And it's all God instances, and He knows what He's doing. And it's beautiful sometimes when you can just kind of move with him and let him guide. So last week on the show, we were talking about heaven as a specific physical place as defined by scripture. We went into, you know, a lot of details, you know, regarding, you know, the actual size of it and the detail of the materials as it is in scripture. So this week, interestingly enough, I had planned, you know, on speaking a little bit about hell. You know, you and I kind of connected and thought, well, you know, we're talking about slaying dragons and spiritual warfare here. I think it would be a great kind of tie-in. So today, just wanted to jump in a little on, you know, as we talked about heaven being an actual physical place, hell is the same. You know, starting off, we could look as defined from the Catechism of the Church. The teaching of the Church affirms the existence of hell and its eternity. Immediately after death, the souls of those who die in a state of mortal sin descend into hell, where they suffer the punishments of hell, eternal fire. The chief punishment of hell is eternal separation from God, in whom alone man can possess the life and happiness for which he was created and for which he longs. So that's our church definition. You know, if you just go to Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, in its archaic sense, the term hell refers to the underworld, a deep pit of or distant land of shadows where the dead are gathered. From the underworld come dreams, ghosts, and demons, and in its most terrible precincts, sinners pay, some say eternally, I think we would say eternally,
that's right,
the penalty for their crimes. There is one piece of scripture that, I mean, when I think of hell, that always stands out, you know, for me as I, and I just, you know, thinking of the torments, it's when it's referred to as throwing them into the blazing furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Of course, we know there'll be weeping, but just that idea behind gnashing of teeth. I mean, what are your thoughts when you hear that description of hell? I mean, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, the angst, I guess. I study a lot, like right now I'm reading a lot about what motivated the demons to fall and what animates them, because they're the ones that attack us in temptation all the time. And the gnashing of teeth is this like unquenchable desire for revenge, to attack us, to kill, to get what they lost, this regret. And then the wailing is just the punishment, the pain on top of it all. So they're both miserable, bitter, angry, and tormented in pain at the same time. And another one that comes to mind is the worm that does not sleep.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and some of the doctors of the church, I'm not sure if they all interpret it this way, talk about that as being the conscience, like you're constantly regretting everything you did. And then if you think about a worm literally, though, it goes back to the wailing and gnashing of teeth. Like worms just go around among the dead things in the dirt and constantly eat and expel them, and then like re-eat and re-expel. And that's a lot of the popular images of Satan just devouring and expelling.
Dying, burning but never dying. I mean, just of course, those are the physical, you know, that comes to mind. You know, we think the physical torments, which, you know, are horrible, but the spiritual side, of course, is much worse. You know, the loss of God, it's a place of complete darkness. You know, the light of God is removed, and it's been said that the pains of hell are not necessarily from the burning, but from the coldness of the, you know, the removal of the light of God, which I think is a very scary image. And that weeping, that there's a recording out there I've heard, and I can't remember where it was, but it at some point it was something was revealed. It was a recording of the sounds and the wailing of hell. I don't know if you've ever come across that. Or aware of what I'm talking about.
It sounds familiar, but I can't remember any details.
The validity of it, I don't know, but you know, it was enough for me to hear to really be, you know, put enough, you know, a little bit of fear there, there. So,
yeah.
So hell is obviously a place of complete darkness. So you have all these, you know, you have these physical torments, you have these spiritual torments, and then you have, you know, the darkness, you know, just being in utter darkness. You know, we know fear, you know, as children, my kids, you know, they will just play little games on each other, and they'll be down in the basement, and whoever's last, I don't approve of it. And then we've had a lot of talks about it, but you know, kids, and they'll run upstairs, turn off the lights on the one that's left in the basement. And just, you know, and as a kid, we all know that's a horrible feeling, or being lost. You know, thinking back to childhood, if you've ever been lost, or if you're as a parent, you know, there's been, you know, one or two times where, you know, we may have been in an amusement park or somewhere, and you know, might have lost sight of the child for just that you know, couple of moments or a minute. What fear there, but golly, the fear there, and in the darkness away from God. I mean, it's just, I can't even really put my head around that loneliness and that fear and anguish there.
Yeah, I recently, the last month, I can't remember where it started. I wrote about it in my journal because it was just so profound, was this nagging fear of being buried alive.
Ugh.
And it's something that has kind of haunted me, I guess, for years. Like, that's the worst way to go.
Yeah.
But something about, I really think it was diabolical, because I couldn't get out of my head this image, and it would always hit me. And I would realize when it would hit me, like hit me in my soul, and then it would show me that I'm not trusting God. I don't trust God to govern my death. I don't trust God to protect me at the end of my life. Even if I were buried alive, yeah, I'm not trusting him. But what was also happening was when I would imagine, when I would see, you know, almost like a vision, being buried alive, the terror that would overtake me would shock me. It was kind of like, you know, a fear of hell, an experience of hell, what hell's going to be like. You're essentially buried alive. There's no recourse. There's no one to help you. And we need those. We need that. Like, that happened to me a couple weeks ago again on something else. And I pondered, like, what if this was permanent? It was almost like my guardian angel said that to me when I was considering something. I think it was just some bodily ache that I was just so tired of. I wanted it to go away. But it wasn't. And then my guardian angel perhaps said, what if this was permanent, eternal? What if you eternally felt bad? And the way it worked, it kind of shocked me of the eternity of hell. That's one of the options for the afterlife if we're not careful.
Absolutely. You know, we hear the act of contrition. You know, we go to confession. You know, we're sorry for the sins. We dread the loss of heaven and the pains of hell, but most of all, because we've offended our Lord. And I think, you know, yes, there is a good and healthy fear. There's a good and healthy fear of God, and there's a good and healthy fear of hell. Mm-hmm. And for children, there's a good and healthy fear of parents, not in a demeaning or a condescending or a commanding way, but the, you know, just that's just something that keeps us all kind of in the right direction, right? At a bare minimum. But then mm-hmm. once we really truly understand love and relationship, then, you know, we as children, we as parents, you know, we act out of love, and that, you know, and that's, I know in my life, the closer I've been with God, the times that I'm praying, the times that I'm communicating with him, I don't get the gut-wrenching, you know, fears of life, whether they're just, you know, bad things that come along in life. And they're, you know, we've all got those bad things that come along, whether they're in business or relationships, friends, you know, whatever, maybe our spiritual walk. But it's nice to sometimes reflect on that and think, wow, you know, I remember that point in my life when I wasn't very happy. And going back to earlier, our youth, you know, late teens and 20s, I mean, I hit rock bottom and I just cried and wailed. Speaking of wailing, I mean, I was wailing and just in misery, but thinking of those times, because I wasn't close to God at those times. I didn't know what the answer was, but I knew I wasn't happy. And so I had that. And I think, you know, when we have that, we want to move further away from that. And the only way we move further away from that is union with God. So having that knowledge of it, I think it's good to have that fear and that reminder that it's there. But once we kind of understand the relationship and we move in a spirit of love, that all goes away, really. I mean, it really does. I can look at the times I'm closest with God and things are still a pain and there's still burdens of life. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I wish that wouldn't happen. And, you know, I wish things were a little bit better, but they're not gut-wrenching. You know,
so. Yeah. All of our like a vice and virtue conditioning, like when we trust God, we love him, we're in a relationship with him, we tend towards the virtues are growing, the virtues are inflamed. And if we stub our toe, even if we break our toe, when we stub it, like, it's painful, but we're not going to despair. We know God let it happen. Everything's going to be okay. It's just an earthly hindrance. But if we're in a state of distance from God and the vices are inflamed, we stub our toe, we're probably going to just curse and yell and punch the wall and think my life is over. This always happens to me. Like, why did you let this happen, God? So it really does condition our reactions, our instincts, our thoughts, our feelings, whether we're in a relationship with God or not.
Yeah. And then I think as we start to understand that relationship and we move into that spirit of love, we also start to gain the knowledge of God in a way that, you know, we can see what these things are coming, because they're all coming at us to pull us away from God. Ultimately, anything that's negative, anything that's bad, anything that's gut wrenching, it's there. So as Job, it's there to pull us away, to turn our backs on God. you know, and like, you know, I'm sure, you know, we both, you've shared, and, you know, at the same time, we don't know where to direct that. So we direct it at this unknown God, you know, that mm-hmm. that we, you know, supposedly think is in control. But if, you know, if we do indeed believe that, then all the more reason why we should, you know, should be following him. So, so that's, you know, it's an interesting perspective, because that, as you move closer to God, obviously the devil wants to intervene there and pull in. And thus, you know, we do have, you know, the demons and evil spirits that, you know, when you are closer with God and you're seeing things in a pure, simple way as God sees them, you start to recognize what they are. And I think that's, I guess, a lot of the inspiration here with you, with your book, as you've grown spiritually, you know, starting to see those things. And I guess, you know, I haven't had a chance to read Slaying Dragons yet. It is on my list. But, you know, tell me a little bit, going into, you know, some of the details, or, you know, of how that envelops in the book.
Yeah, one of the big things that... I can't remember the list that I came up with early on, but there are four big aha moments when I was doing the research and writing the book. But one of them was fear. Was I used to have a real fear of demons, like how they worked. Not because I didn't know how they worked, but I thought they were like kind of unleashed, uncontrollable monsters. And if I went anywhere near them, they would harm me. So I had to be careful not to provoke them. Even like not trying to become super holy. I had this thought one time that I need to be careful not to become someone like Padre Pio, because I don't want the devil to attack me. I'm like, oh, that was a very, very bad thought. And I know my guardian angel convicted me as soon as I had that thought. I'm like, wow, that was dangerous. But one of the things that the book cleared up was that we must not only we don't have to, but we must not fear the demons. And this, I think, clarifies so much. Like, demons, people are interacting with the issue of the diabolical, whether they believe in demons or not, all the time. And you're either afraid of them, or you feel like God is going to protect you from them, and you're in a battle, and you have the weapons, and you can be at peace, and they're not going to mess with you unless you let them. So one of the big things in the book, it's a repeated theme, because exorcists talk about their interactions even with bishops. Like, it's all throughout the church. Like, people don't believe the devil exists, or they're afraid of him. Even some bishops are afraid to appoint an exorcist because they don't want the devil to come after them, like a retaliation. Like, that's like Father Amorth reported that. And then Father Gary Thomas, another exorcist, also said bishops have told him that they don't believe or they're afraid. I can't remember both. But we don't have to be. And that's one of the things that a lot of people have gotten out of the book is peace. Like, some people are afraid to read the book because it's about demons and they think that it's going to scare them. But the exact opposite is what happens to people. They read it and they realize, oh, well, yeah, that's what the demons are doing. They're dangerous. They're crazy, evil. But I don't have to be afraid of them because God is protecting me all the time. In all of these ways, God is protecting me. Then I can be at peace, even though there are demons out there. And I think that ties it back into the relationship. The deeper our relationship is with Christ, the more we have peace and the tangible effects of his love in our life, which is he conquers the demons and protects us from them.
Yeah.
But there are also these warnings talking about the issue of hell. Like, if we stray from him, the demons are there kind of to scare us back to him, but also as a warning of what'll happen after death if we abandon Christ, like what we'll get. Like, these will be our eternal companions, the demons.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have today, but we are going to pick this up next week, where we continue discussing spiritual combat and get into a little bit about Halloween. Hope everyone has a great week. And just a reminder that registration is open for the upcoming March 5th, 2022 Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas, where you can meet Charles in person and pick up some of his books. Information can be found at www.catholicmenofthecarolinas.org. And the Carolina Media Network still has their 30 for 30 fundraising campaign going on. Make sure to go to www.carolinacatholicradio.org to get more information and help keep us on the air. If you'd like to find out more about Charles and pick up a copy of his book Slaying Dragon or one of his other books, you can go online to www.theslayingdragonsbook.com. For the Obligation Radio Show and the Carolina Catholic Media Network, this is Jason Murphy. God bless and Esto Vir.